Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
Welcome back to the Great Big Super Special Friday Show here on Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. In this hour, we are joined by Layla Miller. We're going to talk a bit about preserving the innocence of children. First of all, what are our obligations as parents, as a society, in preserving the innocence of children? What are the challenges we face? How can we better meet those challenges? I'm not going to give out the number because we pre-recorded this show. We're just having a chat with Layla. Layla, as you probably know, is the co-author with Trent Horn of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. She's also the author of Primal Loss, The Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak, and of Raising Chaste Catholic Men. She blogs at Little Catholic Bubble. Layla Miller, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here, Cy. Thanks for having me.
So the book is selling like, candy cane flavored hotcakes. So obviously, nice. There is a felt need for some way to help our children in these very confusing times.
Yeah, I think there was a void out there. We really didn't have something that could be easily accessible on all these really contentious issues that we haven't been well catechized about ourselves, and they're coming at us fast and furious. So parents are freaking out. They don't know what to do. And we just thought, okay, we need to have something in one place that's super easy to read, not going to, you know, stress anyone out and have to have a theology degree to get through it. And so it looks like it's really hit a nerve and a need, and people are excited about it. From what I've heard, it's been well received, and it has actually even kind of been well received in areas that I didn't think it would be. So that's kind of been interesting as well.
Well, how much of your life as a mom, as a writer, as a speaker, all that has been, would you say, a kind of response to the really, and these are my words, I will not suggest that these are your words, dumb and destructive parenting and child rearing ideas that have come out over the last 50 years. How much do you think that you've been in response mode to that?
Yeah. a lot.
Yeah.
I do. I've tried very hard. We've done every type of different schooling for our kids. I mean, everything from public schools to, private schools to Catholic schools to public charter schools. But in all of that, we do come across a lot of different types of parents, different types of parenting. There's really this idea now. I mean, there's kind of the permissive parenting has been out there for a while. I think we used to, back in the old days, maybe we had more of that authoritarian parenting, which was everything was done by fear. Mm. And you'd kind of just said, you know, do it because I said so and all that. We've swung to the really permissive parenting, which is you really don't want your child to feel a negative emotion. That's huge. You know, okay, whatever you want, honey, and I'll kind of kowtow to you and your feelings. And parents get really afraid that their kids aren't going to like them. It's a huge thing right now. Everybody's afraid to parent because they think their kids aren't going to like them. And we all fall prey to that. I mean, I want my kids to like me. I do. but I have an obligation, you know, first to parent before I'm going to be able to just be their friend. So,
yeah, so
that's out there. It's difficult.
And then in that atmosphere of this kind of, I think of it myself as Dr. Spock, even though I'm not, I've never read a Dr. Spock book, but I kind of think of it as that was a kind of a beginning to this, what you call permissive parenting. But okay, so that leads to a great deal of confusion about what exactly am I supposed to do as a parent. But then we have surrounding us a culture that seems to be deteriorating in its own morals, in its own kind of concern at all about children. So I'll just give you an example. So there was a holiday show on Sunday. I did not watch this holiday show, but I know I heard about it because everyone was talking about it the next day on some of the radio programs I listened to. And it's the Victoria's Secret holiday special. Well, that seems to me that is so perverse, and people don't see that's wrong. That's not how we used to be. We didn't used to do that kind of thing. So so we're not just responding to our own confusion as parents because of all the things that have been said, but it's a very confused society around us.
Right. And all the sin that's kind of entered society since the sexual revolution and all that has steadily and now really, really rapidly obscured our sense of sin, our intellect is darkened, you know, our wills are weak, and so we're not even really seeing it. There's a spiritual blindness where we're not even seeing what's going on. And you can't even appeal now to the past or to tradition or to previous moral values that everybody kind of knew because, and this was really interesting, something I learned recently, studies have shown that, for example, and I don't mean to pick on the millennials. I have millennials. I have wonderful children who are millennials.
Right.
But millennials in general tend to be peer educated, meaning they only want to learn from each other, and they don't want to hear from someone that's older and wiser. And they think that those ideas don't have any merit because, you know, you're not woke, you're not enlightened, you're not cool, you're not whatever. So they're not listening to anything that came before. So they're stuck in this one little moment. And they're disconnected from tradition, which, of course, is a real demonic tool. You know, the enemy loves that, disconnected from what came before. And so that's why we're seeing, they're not even recognizing that this is a sick, perverse culture that we could have something like what you just described and not even bat an eye.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying. Right, they don't bat an eye because they don't have something else that to measure it by, I suppose. Or and you're saying they don't even want another measure. They want to use their own peer group as the measure.
That's kind of the scary part to me. I was like a little bit horrified when I heard that, but I heard that from an academic, a social scientist, and she said, no, that's what has been determined is they want. And I've actually, Cy, this is really interesting. So I do some on Facebook. I have like a Catholic moms mentoring, and I thought, okay, because I had a group of older women like me, you know, I'm in my 50s, and then there were some younger women who kept saying, could you help us like with parenting? And I thought, okay, I'm going to combine that. We're going to have these groups of older and younger moms, and one of the moms that came in was a really you may even know her, Christine Franklin. She's a wonderful Catholic.
I know Christine. Yeah, I used to work with
she's
Christine.
Great. She's fantastic. So she told me that she was so happy that this group existed because she joined a Catholic moms group at one point and thought, oh, good, I'll be able to help some of the younger kids, you know, younger girls and women who are raising their kids. They told her, oh, your kids are already raised. We don't want you to advise us because you're basically old. You're not raising kids, so we can't use your thoughts and your advice. And she was like, what? What on earth? That's not how it's done. But there's this disconnectedness, like we only want to talk to each other and hear from each other what we think our opinions are. And not every millennial, again, there's really wonderful, but that tends to be the mindset of that age group.
Under the influence of a media that has marginalized older people and made them basically the butt of jokes. Or they're the problem. You know, we need to overcome those old people and their values. So it's another thing. When you're young, you don't realize how much under the influence of media you are. You think of yourself as a free thinker when you're thinking the exact same thoughts everybody else who watches Entertainment Tonight is thinking.
Exactly.
So but you also have written a great deal about divorce. I wonder if we can give these young people a bit of a break. They are the children of a mess that we made. Yeah. They didn't make it. We made it.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Absolutely. They don't have, I mean, we made that mess for them. Absolutely. We don't have a foundation for them. They're floating out there, kind of half of the kids out there, they're floating between two different worlds, their mom's world, their dad's world. They're going back and forth. They don't have the stability of not only an intact family, as God intended, that a child would be raised in the stability of a married mother and father. I mean, that's the natural right of a child. But also, now we don't have the stability of a moral law that is understood to be for all people. So they don't have that. If they don't have a religious upbringing on top of that, what do they have? I mean, all they have is their feelings. Like, yeah. I feel this today, I feel that. Here's what social media is telling me. Here's what every one of my peers is telling me that I need to be thinking, otherwise I'm not I'm not cool, you know, I'm not woke, I'm not whatever. So they have to do, it's a lot of social pressure, peer pressure, but not connected to anything. It's just floating. They're floating. And that's a dangerous position that we're in as a culture, because what comes next?
And we're all in it. I mean, we're all in it. And I have to say, Layla, when I hear you describe them floating, the first image that comes to my mind is the seers of Our Lady of Fatima description of hell, of people just floating, having no direction, just floating around.
That's kind of a really good and maybe accurate kind of scary, because the souls are really what's in danger. That should be our primary concern, is we've got souls to think about, and these children are, it's dark out there. I have an eighth grader who tells me that all the time. He's like, Mom, my generation is very depressed.
No,
it's
know.
It's dark.
Right.
So I feel very sorry for these kids.
Well, okay, so there is hope. As a matter of fact, there's just a ton of hope around this because God is good, and God has given us the tools we need to preserve the innocence of children. But when we come back from the break, I want to ask you about, first of all, get a why question into you. Why would we want to preserve the innocence of children? Is that a way of just, repressing them sexually or having control? Are we control freaks, all that kind of thing? Or is there something about the nature of a child that should be protected in its innocence? We'll do that when we come back with Layla Miller. Right now, I just want to remind you that you're probably getting your Christmas gifts, and we've got very special limited time offer through this weekend. From now until Sunday at midnight, promo code CALIVE18 will save you 35%. On hundreds of items in our online shop, including Layla Miller's book with Trent Horn, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. So 35% off on that and many other books. This weekend is a great time to take care of that shopping and save. Also, you get $5 flat rate shipping in the continental U.S. Go to shop.catholic.com. Use that promo code CALIVE18.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
Our mission is to transform the world one woman at a time through a spiritual program of formation that helps them to see who they are as daughters of the Most High God and to enjoy the gift that God has given to them by virtue of their femininity.
Women of Grace with Jeanette Bankovic-Williams. Tomorrow morning, 11 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Well, it's Christmas, at the approach of Christmas, this is one of the times when we most delight in the innocence of children, but we are not exactly clear on what are we supposed to do in maintaining the innocence of children? How much are they should they be exposed to the, let's say, less innocent side of our culture? How do we protect them? And what is too much protection? All of that is part of our discussion today on preserving the innocence of children with our guest, Layla Miller, who with Trent Horn, I don't know what he did. I think he just did the typing. But with Trent, they have the brand new book, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. So I suppose you have to get to the real basics with people today, because there is a growing sense that there's not even anything such a thing as human nature, that you are what you feel you are. We see that certainly in the transgender movement, but in all kinds of ways, frankly, that this generation did not invent. But there's a kind of acceleration of these things. It's like a snowball kind of picking up speed. So is there a human nature? Is there a special value to the innocence of the child? Is there a nature, in other words, of childhood that deserves this preservation of innocence?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the time of growth. You know, there's growth in other areas than sexuality. I mean, we're all sexual beings, but the genital activity, the thoughts of explicit sexual activity, that isn't supposed to come until puberty and beyond. And so you've got these years that Pope St. John Paul II called the years of innocence, which is approximately from the ages of 4 or 5 through puberty, which is the latency period. It's where the sexuality is really latent. You don't stir it up. You don't make a child think about those things. It's not natural for a child to think about those things. When a child's a baby, they might be interested in, you know, little boys, or especially little boys, interested in their genitals or whatever. But and it's not really it's not in a sexual way. But then once they hit about 4 or 5, they their thoughts and activities turn to other things. They're not really interested in any kind of genital stuff. They're interested in playing outside, you know, being playing with their peers. Generally speaking, they would play maybe with the same sex peers, learning about family life, mom and dad. You know, mom and dad love each other. Oh, look, a new baby's coming. But you wouldn't have to have the sexual part of why that baby's coming or what's happening. They're kind of getting this indirect teaching on human sexuality, human relationships. But they're very innocent. They're very carefree. You know, you can tell the difference between a kid who's just carefree on these sexual issues versus someone who maybe has stumbled upon pornography, which a lot of young children do these days. Let's say age 8 seems to be almost, I think they said, the average age where you first see something like that. And these kids suddenly become different. You know, they're sullen. They become addicted to pornography. They have, and same thing, you know, if there's divorce and you have new partners coming in and out of mom and dad's life, and you see, you know, your mom in bed with another man, or you're abused by a non-biological male that's in and out of your life, or whatever. These things, we all know. We know how detrimental that is to children, because their innocence, their sexual innocence has been violated. So why we're doing this as a culture now, we're introducing all these LGBTQ and let's tell them all about homosexuality and transgender and all these different things that have no place in a young child's mind or heart. We're bringing it in. You know, we've already had Planned Parenthood in the schools for a long time, but now it's all these new and different deviations, or deviancies, if I can say, that are really harming and darkening, you know, our children's souls. It's a terrible violation.
Okay. Yeah. I think most people would say, yeah, what you would want for a child is an orderly life, one that's predictable for them, and one that does not introduce these things into their life prematurely and all that. Although, like you said, with Planned Parenthood in the schools, and now there's a kind of agenda about teaching about different kinds of family and different kinds of sexual relationships at a very young age, I guess to build tolerance or something. So most people would say that, but what if I said to you, Layla, it looks to me like we have a society where we create all these worries for parents about the food that their children eat and how to develop a super genius child because they got to get that great computer programming job when they grow up, and how to do and a million things are and especially on mothers, maybe, because fathers are a little bit, frankly, in general, certainly not all, but a little bit less interested interested in their own children. I think that's just the natural fact. Mm-hmm. So we don't obsess about did the child get an apple today, or did that apple have a chemical in it that I shouldn't have? And you know, is the food all organic, or is it, what am I supposed to do about gluten? And all of these these worries have parents so busy and frantic that they don't know their basic job.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the pressures from the culture and to worry about, you're absolutely right. And social media hasn't helped, because everything has to be the way everybody else thinks it's supposed to be, and you have to have the perfect child and the perfect, all the activities they're supposed to be in, otherwise they're going to fall behind, and everything is geared towards their future success. But we're talking about worldly success. We're not talking about their souls. And things like what they eat, which of course Christ said, don't be concerned with what you eat or what you wear. But we're concerned with everything, this minutia, and these mothers are just frantic, because it is the pressure to get it right is taking a toll on the moms, and they are not paying attention to really the only ultimate thing that matters, which is the moral formation of their children, not the earthly. I just got back from EWTN and talking to Father Mark there, who's a wonderful, one of the friars there, and we were talking about the push, even among Catholics, even among good and influential Catholics, to talk about the world and how to fix the world, and that's what we're supposed to be doing. You know, supposed to make these perfect kids, and we're supposed to make this utopia on Earth. I mean, that's a huge push now with social justice warriors and all that. But we have completely forgotten about the supernatural. You know, the fact that we're trying to get our kids to heaven. That's the point, is we want our kids to, their souls to be right with God, and to raise them in such a way that they make it to heaven. Because if we've done everything else on earth and made everything perfect and they don't get to heaven, then we failed completely in our job and our vocation. So we've completely lost sight of that, I think, and even Catholics lose sight of it with all the buzz and the noise and the social media telling us what we need to be doing.
I'm fascinated that you pointed to Christ's own words about don't worry about what goes into the body. You know, nothing that enters the body makes it unclean. It's what comes out that makes us unclean. And so there's a way in which there's something about the person of Christ and that relationship with him that relieves a great deal of anxiety, I think. It seems to me that our culture has become an anxiety machine that just is designed to make you think you don't have the right stuff, you don't have the right job, you didn't go on the right vacation, you didn't raise your kids with the right diet, or just, and that Christ relieves that anxiety, actually. It's not a burden to come to Christ. It's not like, it's like a relief. Like, okay, now if I know his priorities, then I'll be all right in my parenting.
Yeah, it is such a consolation to realize that all the noise and all the this pressure, pressure to do this, that doesn't come from Christ.
No.
So if you can recognize that's not coming from Christ, Christ is asking some very simple things of us, and we have to go back to this idea that the truth is very simple. It's not simplistic, and it's not stupid, and I'm not talking about that, but I mean it's very simple in its essence. There isn't a lot required of us. It's just that we have to have a pure heart. We have to do his look at Christ, look at the cross, and do his will, and cultivate virtue. And those things aren't, you don't need a PhD. You don't need any, it's not rocket science. That's why all the, the kids at Fatima and the other, little children can do this and can know Christ. You know, we can know him, but we have to be simple and childlike ourselves. We've completely forgotten that, and we've complicated everything, and that's why we're so uptight. We're so anxious all the time. People are frightened. And why?
Yeah.
Why are we so afraid? Where's our confidence? That's one thing parents do not have, and they need their confidence.
Right. Okay. So now I'm a parent. I've been listening to you, Layla Miller, or maybe I've read your book, Made This Way, that Trent Horn typed up for you. And and I say, okay, I do believe my job is to preserve the innocence of these children in this madness of this world. And I look, okay, so how do I do that? Help me out, Layla. How do I do that?
Yes, and the first thing I tell, and it's funny because, you know, we've had this conversation, and I forgot to mention that when I talked about the latency period or just what kids need at a certain age and how to kind of not be so concerned with certain things that the culture is concerned with, there's an entire document that parents don't even know exists from the Pontifical Council for the Family, and it's called The Truth and Meaning of Human Sexuality. You could just Google it, print it out, get a highlighter, and start reading. It tells you how to deal with your children and educate them in this way in, within the family. It's very beautiful. So a lot of that comes from there. But basically, you just want to teach your children that there is a right order to life, that life is not, life is a beautiful thing, and it's very beautifully designed. Our bodies, our relationships with each other, human nature. God had a plan for all of this, and it wasn't what we're seeing in this culture, which is just this complete chaos. It was something very simple, and we can look at the design of God's creation, and we can say, oh, okay, and that's kind of how we do this in the book. You know, we talk about natural law. If we teach kids to see the nature of something, and we teach them that we use a thing according to its nature or its design, then things are going to go well. Things are going to flourish. And if we use something against its nature, things are going to go really bad, usually and even catastrophically if it has to do with human beings and human interactions and how we act in a moral way or an immoral way. So we can do that with kids all the time. They know that you use certain things in certain ways. You don't touch a hot stove. There's a reason for that. You know, you put gasoline in the car and not water in the tank, and then daddy's car will work, you know. So kids can start to understand that life isn't that complicated. Look at how things were made. Look at our nature as human beings. Look at the nature of the things around us. Let's use them according to the nature of that thing, and you will find that there's a peace there. There's a peace, and things go the way they're supposed to go. At the very least, the kid understands, at least my kids, again, I've taught my kids this way, and they seem to understand the world has an order, and they can see what happens when people don't follow that order.
We will continue our conversation with Layla Miller, author of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. As we approach the birth of innocence into our world, we talk about preserving the innocence of our children now in this time. More of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Christmas is coming, and with Advent already upon us, we want to make sure you know about our annual Christmas sale with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout. With great new resources by Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Christopher Check, and other great Catholic teachers, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com right now to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet, going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout to save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love. Monday on Mortal Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
That little baby born in the manger is supposed to tell us something about who we are and who God is, and the innocence of that little baby. A greater innocence than any child ever born with, perfect innocence, and not just a human, but also divine innocence. And so there is some value to this. It's clearly an arrow pointing in the direction of there's something value here. God could have incarnated himself in any way he wanted. He chose to be born of a woman and to be raised by parents who loved him and cared for him and brought him to the temple and did all these things. So what does that tell us about our obligations today as far as raising children whose innocence is valued and preserved? Layla Miller is our guest, and Layla is the author with Trent Horn of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, among other things. And you were just telling me, Layla, you've been doing a lot of media around this mm-hmm. book. So I'll try not to wear you out. But at the break, we were just chatting with some of the fathers here at Catholic Answers. And I was telling you that we have we have so many wonderful young people here, and they're mm-hmm. marrying and having children. And we found out another baby being born to one of our staff members this morning. And it's all. And Andrew here has told us about his daughter, Magda, his brand new daughter. And he said, nobody's going to tell me how to raise my daughter. Now, you applauded him for that. So,
I did. I said, I like strong fathers. You know, I feel bad. We keep, shaming or making our fathers kind of recede into the background, but we need strong fathers who are like, you know what, I'm the protector of this family, so good, protector of that daughter, huh? Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, he's making a muscle now as you are speaking. So, both father and mother, we have, and everybody else, I guess, associated with the child. And I suppose that's another problem we may have is there aren't enough people associated with a child these days, or there's not as many as there once were. We're often isolating, leaving a mom alone, or people have all these pressures. Babies end up in daycare and all that kind of thing. And there's not that, I guess, kind of extended family thing that we look back to fondly. It was certainly it was a lot of work for the people who did it in the olden days, but. These circles circles of community, they're important to a child.
Right. And to tiptoe into difficult waters, you know, but we've tended to put the economic stuff, the economic sphere, as kind of the gauge of where everybody should be and what success is. And we forgot that the whole point of economics, I think even the root of the word, I mean, I'm not going to get into the etymology or the Latin, I don't know, but I've heard tell that it has something to do with the fact that it's about keeping the home. So in other words, you know, yes. You go out there to work in order to have a home life. That's the whole point. It's like that's not an end to itself. It's a means to an end to provide for a safe haven for families, because family is the core of society. You know, marriage is the core of society. And so since we've decided, well, no, it's more about, and again, I'm not saying that everybody has this mindset, but it seems to be that we've made that the more important sphere than making sure that sacrificing and making sure that, you know, no matter what, if there's any possible way that we have a child raised first in an intact family and second, hopefully, with especially when the babies are little, that the mom can be there with the baby. Because even the, I always say, and gosh, it's amazing that this might even get me into trouble, but it's so obvious. Even the design of a mother's body is to keep a child close by in those young years. That's why we nurse. You know, that's right. Why God made this attachment. So it's not a bad thing. It's a really good thing for a child. And they can't always happen. We get it.
No, right.
But let's not forget that's the best thing for the child.
But if we refuse to admit what the nature of a mother is, what the nature of a child is, what the nature of a father is, then we can always admit there are cases, and maybe many cases in the modern world, where we can't quite do the ideal. But mm-hmm. but if we refuse to say even that there is an ideal, we're in big
right.
trouble.
Right.
So as a matter of fact, it's sometimes controversial, for example, to say if a mother nurses her children, her health is better. This is good mm-hmm. for her body. She will heal mm-hmm. more quickly. She will receive all kinds of long-term health benefits, including protection mm-hmm. from cancer. Because what that we're you're just trying to make women feel guilty or about being in the right. workplace or something.
Yes. Yeah. You can't ever say anything about what might be the highest good or the best way or according to God's design or his plan. You can't say any of that for fear of offending someone who for whatever reason might not have been able to do exactly that. And that's okay. I mean, no one's saying that's a sin or, you know, we can't read the hearts of why someone did something differently. It's not up to us to say. But now that we can't even say the ideal, now we have no ideal. So since we have no ideal, then we have every single thought or idea is just someone else's opinion. So there's no hierarchy of value or hierarchy of truth. It's all just, well, it's whatever you feel that you have to do or whatever you... No, well, we can't... That's relativism. I mean, that's just completely... that's what we're doing in the moral law as well, which is we're saying that even the church's opinion, the church's teaching on the moral law is just one opinion among many, because who's to say? And even Catholics are kind of acting that way now. So, and we wonder why there's this moral chaos out there where we can't teach our children right from wrong, because do we even believe it anymore? The culture doesn't, and Catholics are so afraid to even put forth that there could be this truth that we're kind of cowardly. I have to say, I feel really bad saying that too, but I think there's a cowardice that's kind of gripped a lot of Catholics.
So what do you say to the parent then who, I don't want to be out of step with society. I don't want to be, I don't know, you know, maybe I don't have the confidence. I haven't thought deeply about these things. Mm-hmm. The latest and greatest, of course, is the transgender thing. So I don't want to pick mm-hmm. on that, but it's just so obviously the latest moral emergency we have, that we have to change all of society to face this new moral emergency. But the fact that a parent might say, I don't want to be mean. I don't want my kids to grow up mean. So what do you say to that parent who may actually do a great deal of harm to the child if they won't just say what's real and what's not real?
Right. And that you've really hit on something massive, because if, you know, we want to say, well, it's just because we don't want to be mean and we want to be compassionate, or when really it might just be that we're being cowards. Okay, yeah. we really have to examine ourselves on that, because nobody, like the biggest thing that everybody wants to avoid is social shame. You don't want your neighbors to think, you know, that you're a horrible person. You don't want to be socially shunned. You don't want to be seen as mean, bigoted, awful. So what we do is we just sort of go, okay, well, I'm just not going to talk about that thing. And then we kind of fade away. Nobody talks about it. Everybody who does have a voice, which is the other side, they talk loudly with their laws as well as just their rhetoric. And then your child is watching. So here's the problem. You may not want to be socially shunned, and you may not be strong enough to say something, but what you're doing is giving your child an example. Your child is watching you, not willing to stand and take mocking or ridicule like Christ did, right?
Right.
Christ actually took all this, right? That's what Christians do. We imitate our Lord. So we don't want to do that. We can't do that. The child sees that we can't do that. You think that child is going to do that in high school then, or that child is going to do that in junior high? Really? Of course not. If you can't do it as the parent, what model are you giving that child, who is much weaker, because peer pressure in junior high is much stronger than it is, you know, for us adults? So what are we expecting? Guess what? I'm sort of outspoken, if you can't tell, but God is not going to look at that and say, great job, parent. Great. That was great. Great example. No. Your job was to be the model. You're imitating Christ, and your child is going to imitate you. So if you can't be strong and courageous, why on earth would you expect that your child could ever withstand this culture? They're going to be eaten alive.
Yes, they're going to be eaten alive. So how do we communicate to them that we love and we're called to love, and nobody is outside of God's love? And that means nobody should be outside of my love. But we are not in sync with this culture. So how do we communicate both of those truths? Because they are both true.
Yeah. And it's the difference, and it's another thing we've lost in this society, because we're not thinkers anymore, we're feelers. Nobody seems to be able to differentiate or make a distinction between a person whom we love people, versus an act or an idea, which might be wrong, right? So an act or an idea could be wrong, but a person is always someone to love. So we can't make that distinction anymore. We think that whatever a person thinks or does, we have to affirm that because that's somehow affirming the person. But that's not true at all. I always say, I have this wonderful friend. She's a she's someone who used to read my blog, and we just have become friendly over the years. And she's a Buddhist, lesbian, pro-choice feminist. And she's great. Like, we really enjoy each other. She likes my grandkids. We talk about we don't agree on a lot of things. I mean, she knows exactly how I feel on these issues. But we're able to love one another. It's not mutually exclusive, where you have an idea and you disagree and you make your case, and versus, you know, I hate you, you're terrible. No, of course not. So we can show that to our children and say, you know what, we love everyone. We pray for everyone. If someone's off the rails morally, we pray for them. We can't read their heart. We don't know. But we do know that we can't go along with something that is opposed to truth or something that is opposed to Christ's plan and his design for things and God's God's natural order, his created order. So we have to teach our kids from the very beginning that there's a distinction between loving people, but, you know, truth as far as ideas and acts, we have to really stick by those as well, because it's only for the best interests of the people that we stick by the truth.
Yes, indeed. Indeed it is. Right. And that ability to be friends with all kinds of people, that is a great example to children. I mean, I think it's important that we love everyone and show that, except, of course, for people who drive slow in the fast lane. I think
that goes without saying.
But other than that, everybody is within the realm of God's love. And go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to add one thing. And then the caveat to that is, if something is going to harm your child's innocence, then you do have to draw a line when they're young.
You got to fight.
So, for example, I mean, if there are people in your life that are going to confuse or, push an agenda or something on your child that you just simply don't, you know, even that document from the Vatican said you're not even supposed to talk about homosexuality to your young children. They're not even supposed to know about it. Now, obviously, that was written in 1995. I don't think we can even do that anymore because it's right in everybody's face. But if you find that some family situations or other situations with friends is just too in your face, and these kids are going to be seeing things that they shouldn't see at that age, it's okay to shelter your child. The whole point of raising children is sometimes you're going to have to be that weird family that is kind of the one that says, you know what, gosh, I can't come over for Thanksgiving this year. We're going to have our own little tradition here. You don't have to make a big deal out of it, but maybe you can't be there in the home of the cousin with his homosexual, live-in lover, in their home or something. You know what I'm saying?
Because that's for later. You're that sheltering. You're still that, even just as you sheltered the little infant, you're at a 5-year-old or 6-year-old, you're sheltering them less, but you still have a duty there. I want to talk about the duties and obligations of parents when we come back, but I also want to talk about just the general sense that in many ways our society does not assault the innocence of children and would support you in protecting the innocence of your children. It's primarily in sexual matters that that we've gone completely off the rail. It's like a protected area where you're creepy if you don't go along with the current sexual mores. So we'll talk all about that with you and our obligations given that reality right after this break. It is approaching Christmas, as you know. And I want to remind you again, we've got that big sale going on, 35% off hundreds of items in our online shop all weekend. If you put in the promo code CALIVE18, Layla Miller's book with Trent Horn, Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, is there. You can get it individual copies. You can get it in bulk. There's plenty of copies available because we know that lots of people want this book this weekend. Make great big giant savings, 35% off almost everything at shop.catholic.com when you use that promo code CALIVE18.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Yeah, at first I loved the show, but I just wanted to call to encourage that previous caller who had called about the Latin Mass and just encourage him to keep giving it a try and especially try to meet some folks outdoors and let his wife meet some people, and that does make that experience so much better. And thank you for your historical background, and it was a good interpretation of the history.
EWTN. Live Truth. Live Catholic.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, enjoying a very fine hour of conversation with, well, I can't say a very fine hour. I don't know how she'll do for the next 10 minutes, but for at least thus far, it's been a very fine hour of conversation with Layla Miller, author of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. We're talking about preserving the innocence of children. If you take this as a bit of a challenge, good, it is a challenge. It's a challenge for all of us. Let's remember that this is important. The parents have the most vital role. Beyond the parents, probably the wider family and the church, the local parish, all that. And then there's the wider society. And frankly, okay, now I'm a parent. I say, you know what? Layla Miller's right. I have a great duty. I have a sacred duty to preserve this space, to allow this child to grow to greater maturity before they have to face mature things. But I'm driving in my car, and my five-year-old is learning to read, and the sign on the side of the city bus is an advertisement for a show like Sex in the City, and he starts sounding it out, and I'm like, okay, I've turned off the TV. I don't have cable. We watch VeggieTale videos or something, but still, come on, it's everywhere all the time. What am I supposed to do about that?
Right, and that's where the culture forces our hand, even though we're, you know, the church has said, keep them innocent, and then the culture, boy, has gone haywire in the last few years.
Yeah.
So that, you know, whereas before the culture would help parents preserve their innocence, now it's the opposite. So, yeah, so if a child asks a question about a word or something that they've heard in class, the first thing to do is just to buy some time and ask questions, you know, where did you hear that word? Or what do you think it means? Or, you know, kind of ascertain. You never want to give more information to a child than is necessary, because some people really overtalk things when it comes to, oh, no, they heard the word sex, you know, or
yeah.
And then they have to tell them everything. No, you don't. You know, you would just talk to them about how, well, that's something that, you know, that mommies and daddies, when mommies and daddies become married and have babies, that's something we can talk to you about when you're a little bit older. And then you quickly go and find, you know, some resources to maybe have ready when there's another time to talk about it. But a lot of times they may ask a question and then forget about it 5 minutes later, which is really nice. If they don't, that's when we start to use indirect discussions about things. You never want to directly talk about sex with a young kid unless it's inevitable, unless you have to, unless they've really been told something, or else they really keep pushing. And then again, you just give them the very bare minimum of what you can kind of get away with, because you don't want to open that imagination or open those doors to them. And it's tricky, because you almost do have to. Here's an example of something that we had to do. We had our youngest son, he's a second grader, but when he was last year and the year before, he was in a school where two of his little classmates are from, they have the lesbian parents. He was at a public charter school, and it got to a point where, because the other parents in the school, you know, everyone's acting like this is nothing, you know, it's nothing to moms and this great. And my child sort of went over his head a little bit, although he had asked me, oh, you know, can two girls get married? And we had to have that conversation, and that's actually in the book. This is how I dealt with that. But it got to the point where I had to say with my husband, you know, we had to say, okay, we're not going to make a big fuss. We're not going to say anything to anybody. You don't have to be the big bad meanie again. But we decided, okay, it's time to pull out our child from this school and go back to a very traditional, and we're going to drive that half hour to go to a very traditional Catholic school where he can learn his prayers instead, where he can learn about the sacraments, where he can learn about purity, where he can learn about the virtues. And so we did. And so sometimes you have to do something that is very inconvenient to make sure that your child is still sheltered while not being, you know, not wanting to hurt anybody, but that's kind of our job. You know, our job is to make sure that they're protected. And if that means homeschooling, if that means pulling out of one school or another, if it means not watching TV anymore, at least the majority of their time when they're little will still be protected. And there's nothing to be ashamed of in protecting a child. This is a really corrosive, toxic culture for children. And so don't be ashamed of being protective of their innocence. That's actually your only kind of number one job, is to protect the souls of your children. So
yeah, okay. So
I could babble on. You know me. So I
But as you're as you're speaking, I'm thinking of a moral obligation on all of us because I think with this bishop's crisis that we've had in the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. we're all realizing we didn't speak up when we should have spoken up.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I feel like we have to say certain hard things that we wouldn't have said a year or two ago. And among them is Catholic schools aren't doing a great job of protecting
right.
children. There's too many parish schools that are run by people who in their heart don't embrace what the church teaches on,
they don't believe it.
On sexual issues. And I don't know why bishops allow it. I don't know why pastors allow it. But
it's a great scandal, in my opinion, but yes.
And I say that because I know parents who say, I did everything I could and my kid lost the faith,
mm-hmm.
you know. I sent
right.
them to Catholic schools.
Right.
You know, I did. The truth is, even with Catholic schools, you have to be really careful mm-hmm. today.
Yes, very careful. And I know that that's the case, and it's the case in most dioceses. And even in great dioceses, you have to still be very careful about which schools you pick. And sometimes there are no good options, and the only option might be to homeschool.
Yeah.
And then you may have to make great sacrifices to do that. But again, it comes down to the number one job that we have as Catholic parents is the protection of our children's souls, is to get them to heaven. And there's nothing that trumps that. So if we can keep that in the forefront of our mind, we'd be willing to make as many sacrifices as possible, work with other parents who feel like we do. To get to that point, you got to have community that is like-minded and thinks the way that you do, because otherwise it's just easy to be isolated, to feel alone, you don't have the power, you don't have the energy. You have to be motivated by others who have the same concerns. So reach out and find those people. They're in every diocese. I mean, I know that some are better than others, but really there is no more important thing. And you to get your kids through to adulthood without being caught up in this disaster of moral chaos is what we're aiming for. That's pretty much the number one thing now.
All right, I'm going to give you the main objection I have of some listeners will have for you. Okay, yeah, but then you raise a kid who in their late teens or early adulthood, they're unprepared, they're kind of weird, they're socially mm-hmm. awkward. Do you know mm-hmm. the objection I'm talking about? Well,
mm-hmm.
you can't just raise your kids as if, you know, the world isn't going on the way it's going on. What do you mm-hmm. make? What do you say to that objection?
Right. I say that when they're little, again, we're going to talk about the prepubescent years, that is your obligation, is to protect them and to shelter them. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You're supposed to shelter them. Once they hit a certain age, they need to learn how to live in the world, be in the world, but not of it. And so far, so good. I've been able to send some of my kids, all my kids actually have gone to public universities and kept their faith. And they're not weird.
That's like a miracle.
It's a total miracle.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. But because the world makes sense to them, they went into it understanding, oh, that's why everyone here is suffering. That's why this disaster is happening, and that person wants to commit suicide, and that one, you know, has 10 STDs, and that one. Do you know what I'm saying? They kind of get it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't want that. And they know that from the beginning. They're healthy because they were protected as youngsters.
So they're not conformed to that world, but they're able to operate in it.
Sure. And they're, and again, I always want to say this caveat. Anybody can go off the rails because everybody has free will. You know, my kids are no exception. But you give them a much better chance to stay healthy and firm in the faith. If the world makes sense to them, you keep them innocent in those first years. Then once they hit teenage years, I have a kid, that eighth grader I talked about. He's in the public charter school. He's not a Catholic school. And he's like the little apologist out there. He loves talking to, you know, his very depressed friends who are all, unfortunately, addicted. He tells me that all the time. And, you know, we know what they're addicted to. And
I actually don't.
They're very depressed. Pornography, specifically.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of, everyone has a smartphone. My kids don't get a smartphone. I don't care if, you know, they get laughed at. They don't get a smartphone until they're at least a senior in high school.
Yeah.
They can have a flip phone. What's the big deal? It's not going to kill them. But everybody else has their smartphones from the time they're really young, and these boys, especially, you know, you get one hit of pornography, you're looking for more. I mean, it's terrible.
Oh, I know.
So they're very depressed. It's a dark time. Most of them are from divorced families, and they will come to him, even the atheists, and say, you know, will you pray for me?
Oh, how beautiful!
It's so beautiful. But they're so, it's sad. And again, I go back to, it's not that my kid is something special. It's that we've taught him how the world works, and he really believes and sees that that's how things, you know, are ordered. So he's helpful to his friends too, and that's how we want our children to be.
Layla Miller, thank you very, very much. What a great Advent guest. Perfect time for considering these things as we consider the gifts we're going to give our children and how we're going to celebrate and all those kinds of things. Really appreciate the hour. Thank you.
Thank you, Cy.
Layla is the author with Trent Horn of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. You can find it wherever good Catholic books are sold. And you can get it on sale right now at shop.catholic.com. Use that promo code CALIVE18.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.